So I can call it to order even without a quorum.
Yeah, you can.
We'll just defer item two to the next meeting since there is a quorum.
We can't do the meetings. So you want to, okay. Since the champagne and the hors d'oeuvres are out, we can call the meeting to order. And we can't review and approve the minutes because we don't have a majority here.
We need to wait.
There's no public comment to speak of. So anyway, you want to go to the reports? Go to...
I'm going to go to street smarts first.
I'm sorry.
Street smarts.
4.2?
Yep.
Be smart. Oh, there we go. Street.
That's me.
See what happens when you work with older people. It's exciting, isn't it? I know.
I'm an older person.
Okay.
I'm getting very thank you for inviting me tonight. Thank you, committee members. So I'm just going to review our last year and give you some highlights on what's coming forward for the Street Smarts program. As you know, Street Smarts, Saramo Valley, is a collaboration between the Town of Danville, City of Saramo, Contra Costa County, Saramo Valley School District, and the Saramo Valley Fire Protection District. So we all work together to provide bike and traffic safety education programs from grades K through 12. So a couple highlights of our programs. From last year, we had, in the 2016-2017 school year, we had 7 bike rodeos, and that's where we bring contractors. We do a nice presentation for children. They do bike course. They have a hands-on experience on how to have to fit their helmet properly. And also a police officer and a bike shop is also there to check their bike. And we did 29 assemblies, which you'll see some pictures on the right, top right, where we do a nice bike pedestrian and bike traffic safety assembly so the children can learn how to be safe.
Yeah.
This upcoming year, we have 12 elementary schools on the calendar and 12 bike rodeos. And that encompasses 7 schools for the assemblies because of the fact that we have at least 2 at each school. And so that would be 14 assemblies.
Yes.
Now, our middle school program encompasses our newer program we brought to our middle school last year. It's the BMX Flatland Safety Assemblies, where we have a gentleman who's a professional BMX Flatland rider on the left. And then you can't see his face, but it's Mark Balick on the right, and he talks about safety wearing a helmet at our middle school assemblies. So last year we had 5 assemblies in the San Juan Valley. Over 4,500 students and staff members attended our assemblies. And this year, this fall, we already have 3 assemblies already on the calendar. So again, we present these assemblies at middle schools in the San Juan Valley. So we're very excited to continue this program because it worked very well last year. Another middle school program we had was the Be Real Video Contest. Last year, or this past year's theme was Be Safe, Be Smart, Be Seen. We had over 130 parents, teachers, and students attend that event. We had wonderful entries. We had over 50 videos that were entered. We had the top 3 that were chosen, and the first place video was students, 7th grade students from Ironhurst Middle School. And at the very end of our presentation, I'll show you their winning video, which is pretty good. It's very entertaining. So every year we have it at the Danville Village Theater on March 16th. We had it this current year, and we also have it in March next year. So we hope for it to be as successful as it has in the past. And that was our first place winners, Mia Hill and Regan Moore at Ironhurst Middle School. Again, I'll come back to it. It won't play in this format, so I have to come back. High school, we are continuing with our CHP Start Smart program, where we have a CHP officer who has a grant through California Highway Patrol. We bring these assemblies to each of the 4 schools in the San Juan Valley. We usually only had 2 in the past. Now we're encouraging up to, we have scheduled 15 this next school year. The school district is incorporating a parking permit program with that assembly as a requirement for them to get a parking permit on their school, at their school. So that is being currently implemented this year for the following 2018-19 school year. But we have them all set on the calendar, and that publicity will be going out this week, actually. So you'll be seeing more of that. it's a great presentation. You're welcome to join us at any time. It's great whether you have students, but it reminds parents as well and adults like things we shouldn't be doing when driving. Outreach events, we had a successful year. Every, again, our coverage is San Ramon, Danville, and Alamo. Each city, we did three different concerts where I had contractors have a booth. The kids are very cute. They answer safety questions in order to get a prize. And then Saturdays, it was Friday, Saturday, Sunday at three different cities throughout the summer. Then we had additional outreach events, as you see below, as Danville Extravaganza they have. We had a Bike to Work Day at Iron Horse Trail, the Art and Wind Festival in San Ramon, 4th of July Parade in Danville, and a Children's Triathlon in Danville, which was for this past year. So a lot of outreach. We try to get our name out, and kids are recognizing us and saying, oh, you went to our school, so which is great. So that was kind of just a quick summary. I have the video next, but any questions? I kind of went through every program very quickly.
I like the idea of the permitting along with that little program. That's good thinking.
Well, the superintendent, he's from San Diego. It's not Diego. It's D-E-Gato. It's like an extended San Diego name. And he had that program down in San Diego, and it worked very well.
I would imagine.
And so he wanted to bring it up here. So you'll be seeing, we just presented at the school board meeting on Tuesday, Board of Education, and you will be seeing more information going out in the next probably a few days, because we're about ready to launch and have a date. So it'll be very effective.
Who do you use for your bike rodeos?
In what area? Like the contractors?
Yeah.
I have two contractors that work for Street Smarts. They're on a contract from year to year. So they actually go out and do the bike rodeos. Bike shops, it's local bike shops. So for example, if it's a San Ramon bike shop, San Ramon Rodeo, we met at the Bike to Work Day Sports Basement, and they have a little bike shop inside their store. So they're coming to our assembly. If it's in Danville, it's either Danville Bike Shop or California Snowboard and Bikes, and they're also in Alamo. We had 615, I think, is the bike shop. They also have done some of ours. We used to use Dublin Cyclery, but they changed ownership and they got very busy, so they were unable to do. But if you have other, is it bike shops? And then police department, actually we have local representatives depending on the jurisdiction. They come out and do the helmet fitting. So, but if you have any other options for bike shops, last year we went down to one and that wasn't enough, so I just went through the Google and I said, where is there bike shops in San Ramon area? And they've been very excited and they do it voluntarily. I have them bring a coupon. And it's nice. And Sports Basement did a great job at Walt Disney on Tuesday, and they did a little checkoff list. Like their bikes were, you know, make sure their wheels were inflated and their brakes were working, and it was really nice.
Okay.
Any other questions? So now I'll just close our presentation with Street Smarts, the winning video. So I'll have to do a little tricky here because it won't work. And then our wonderful sponsors, of course, the five agencies I mentioned, and then State Farm Insurance gives us a nice grant for $10,000 for our CHP program. PTA also supports us with a financial contribution and also their presence at our meeting. Bishop Ranch has been a continued sponsor in our elementary programs. And Valley Spokesman on the lower right was a sponsor in our middle school BMX program. So we have some wonderful sponsors. So let me go ahead and try this. I have to do this a little bit different. So these are seventh grade students at Iron Horse. It's only 90 seconds.
Look up and cross the street, because you never know who you'll meet. They might be on their phone and you wouldn't have known, and now you have to do they might overdo it. And when you're on a bike, wear a helmet that you like so before you become the big discussion. Wear a helmet to a mannequin costume. And when you're in the car, make sure that you are not on your phone or you'll break somebody's phone. The three simple rules to follow here are stop looking your face before you disappear.
That's good. Yeah, it had a really good catchy tune, didn't it?
Yeah.
They were great, and these girls did everything themselves, and the parents vouched for it. They had no help at all. They had no school help, no parent help, anything. So they really did a great job, and they're looking forward to our next yours contest as well. So
great.
Okay, well, thank you. I'll see you a little bit.
All right. Thank you very, very
okay,
much.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Were you out partying again? All the time. Come on. Yeah. All right. Well, since Al finally showed up.
That's good.
Let's go back to review and approve of the minutes. So, item number two. Any questions or comments on that, on the minutes for the July 20th?
I thought you were getting here 6 minutes late. You were already on 4.2.
That's pretty impressive.
We don't mess around. We gotta get it done. All right. All right. Any comments on the minutes? Any changes? Okay, do I hear a move for approval? Al approval? Second? Atul?
Second.
Okay, done deal. Okay, there's no public for any general public comments. So let's move on to item 4.1, the Safe Routes to School Annual Report.
Great. Thank you very much. I'll be doing the presentation tonight. So this is our annual Safe Routes to School program. For those of you who have been on board for over a year, you've probably seen this in the past. For those of you who haven't, just wanted to provide you with a quick background. The Safe Routes to School program has been in San Ramon since the 1980s, and the main focus of the program is to engineer and enhance school zones and access to school sites to encourage and promote more students walking and biking to school. So every year, our staff heads out to the now 12 elementary school sites. We've definitely grown as a city. We've gone from 7 to 12 elementary school sites over the last 15 years or so. And we conduct observations typically about 3 days at each school site. And during those observations, we meet with the PTA members, my school officers, we brainstorm with the office managers, the principals, to see what issues we can identify and how best to address them. All of that then culminates into the annual Safe Routes to School report. This report is reviewed by several departments as well as our TAC subcommittee, which this year is Mr. DuPont and Mr. Bella, so thank you very much to both of you. And then also by our My Beat My School officers, so we ask all of the officers to take a look at the reports, or the report, our traffic engineering division, so Mike Talley, Deborah Fear, and then of course Lisa and Sergeant Webb as well. So definitely a group effort. We want to make sure everyone's on board. In order to accomplish the education, engineering, and enforcement aspects, we have to make sure if we engineer something, PD is going to enforce it, Street Smarts is going to be able to educate the students about it, and together as a community, we'll be able to encourage the students. So with that, I am going to try out a new presentation. Prezi, for those of you who it is my first time, so I do feel like a kid who's, you know, on her bike, the training wheels and all. As I was going through it with Lisa, I've already identified lots of locations where I can do some enhancements, so I do apologize in advance. But I thought it was better that I try it out here before I go to City Council.
I see.
I'll be able to talk about how you've improved.
Yeah, I'll say, boy, that's a lot better than what
I do look forward to that.
It's so good that she's got this group, right? She can come here and practice.
Let's give a shot. I will run through each of the schools, share the recommendations with you. If you don't mind, just on the staff report, all of the recommendations are listed. If you have questions, concerns, please go ahead and note them. And then once I'm done with the Prezi, we can talk about them. City Council does want to see the input from the TAC. They definitely appreciate it and welcome it because you guys are our community ambassadors. So please feel free to take notes when we can discuss.
Do we assume that if a school isn't listed in this group that there was no changes recommended?
Correct. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, with that, buckle your seatbelt because this can get a little dizzy. So the Safe Routes to School program, as I explained, is really a collaborative effort between school administrators, parents, and the police to develop strategies that increase safety while encouraging and promoting more kids to walk and bike to school.
I'll recommend that you have a better contrast of lettering than the background.
Mm-hmm. Definitely agree with you. So we will begin with Bollinger Canyon Elementary School. And so the map that you're seeing here is actually a snapshot taken from our GIS. So ArcGIS is the geographical sort of mapping system that we use. And something new that we've tried out this year is whenever we bring recommendations forward and they are approved and installed, we would actually like to start building a database with those recommendations. So 5, 10, 15 years from now, you can go in and click on the sign and say, well, when was the sign installed? How much did it cost at the time? What report or what findings had recommended the installation of it? So that there's always going to be this record and it'll build upon itself. It's something we haven't had thus far. So today, if you drive down and you see, say, a do not enter sign at Live Oak Elementary School, you would sit there and say, well, why did they put this there? It doesn't make sense to me, or when was the sign installed? Other times we have situations that come up where somebody will email us and say, there used to be a sign at this intersection, maybe somebody knocked it down. And because we don't have the inventory for it, a lot of times we're scrambling through old work orders trying to find out where the sign was it actually there, and why was it installed. So it would be great to have this electronic database that's accessible by everybody. So these are snapshots from that database, and this is us building into that system. So for Bollinger Canyon Elementary School, you will see that no left turn sign. We would like to implement the one-way circulation to the school during AM and PM hours. This has been something that we've implemented at several school sites. It's been very successful. We implemented at Bollinger Canyon, but only during the PM bell times. And both the PTA as well as the principal have come back and said, it's so effective, why not doing during the AM bell times as well? Because then it's consistent. And when you have grandparents or folks who don't come every day to do pickup, it's confusing for them because they're expecting it to be the same thing in their students. So for the last 2 years in the report, we had mentioned that we were holding off on doing this because we were waiting for the school district to give us additional staff parking. Because when we implement such a program, we take away the on-street parking to add the queuing lane. The school district has finally come back and said that they are not going to repave or pave the knoll that you see along Talavera Drive to add additional staff parking. So at this point, we had to consider queuing and congestion in the AM or some staff parking on the street. And we decided to extend the queuing and sacrifice some of the parking. So that's the trade-off. But we'll definitely evaluate it and see if that was a worthwhile trade-off. And then the little police badge you see is because a common theme you'll notice is we are asking for increased enforcement at our school sites. Over the years, you've seen us come to you with, you know, additional signs, the need for additional markings, but we're really getting a sense from the PTA members and the principals we speak to that parents almost have a sense of entitlement around the school zones. And it's the sense of surprise. You know, I can park in front of the fire hydrant. It's just 15 minutes. I'll be right back. Well, those 15 minutes in that school zone are probably the most valuable and the one place where you shouldn't feel that sense of entitlement. But that's where we're noticing that the violations are just through the roof. So we've had a conversation with our My Beat My School team, and we've said, you guys have done a great job community building. Everyone loves you, very approachable, you know, police department. But now it's time to bring out the muscles. You know, it's time to write those citations just to get people back on track so that they don't feel that they
particularly early in the year.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And kind of set that tone, you know, and it's one of those things where at school sites, everyone's a repeat customer, right? It's the same 400 parents that go to drop off their student. So if you ticket one or two parents at the beginning of the school year, between the WhatsApp and all of the other social media, it will spread like fire, and I think it'll be very effective. So you will notice this recurring theme at almost every school site. We've asked for an increase in enforcement, and we've gone to the extent in the staff report to write and issue citations. So that's one of the things that you'll notice for Bollinger Canyon. The next school that
when you come to the city council, if you have some statistics on actual citations written, if you're going to talk about we're writing more citations, it might be nice to know that we're writing more citations.
Great.
Okay, we've written 6 at Bollinger since the beginning of the school year. We've those kinds of things.
That'd be great. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay, Montevideo Elementary School. So we're gonna jump around the city here, which is something that will also make alphabetical when we come to the city council. For Montevideo Elementary School, we actually don't have any recommendation on the chair. Other than increasing police assistance. So our next school, Coyote Creek Elementary, which this picture, let me go back to it real quick.
Did you say you're increasing enforcement for Montevideo?
We are.
And what is it?
We received complaints from parents along Follow Me Circle, which is the backside of the school, and the Ironhurst Trail provides access to the school site. The office manager said she was actually on duty back there, and she has noticed that parents, they don't actually put their vehicle in stop to let their children out. So as they're driving down the street, they actually cross over. So if they're heading northbound on Fallen Leaf Circle, the curb is to their left. They cross over the opposing travel lane to get curbside, let their kid out of the vehicle as it's still slightly moving, and then cross back over.
Oh my God.
And she said she's actually written down license plate numbers, and when I went and met with her, she said, here are seven different parents, seven different cars, and they do this all the time, and when she's waved them down, they've said, well, I'm in a rush, I'm trying to get to BART station, or I'm trying to get to work, and so
we definitely... Anything below 7 miles an hour would be safe, right?
Push them out.
Tuck and roll.
I'm
trying to
go faster. I taught my kids to tuck and roll.
Put your seatbelt on, just roll out.
Denise Borges, who is the she's been there for as long as I've been
there. Oh. Proof of the lack of intelligent life on the planet.
I mean, and she's taken it on herself to go to the back and provide that supervision, which is definitely outside the school boundaries. But, I mean, just the concern that kids are literally just being told to jump out of moving vehicles. So, I think, you know, we discussed this with Deborah and Mike, and there is no sign that could tell parents to not do that. The only thing we can do is ask them to please enforce
it. Don't throw your kid off the back seat into the street.
Standard sign in the MUTCD.
There's no sign to define like that.
There's no sign to explain common sense.
No sign.
That's
what it comes down to. So we thought police enforcement is probably the only cure for this. All right, so now we will take you to...
You're at Coyote Creek.
I was at Coyote Creek.
Yeah.
Well, this is Neil. Or that's a lot of...
Just choose one. Just choose one we haven't done.
So Coyote Creek Elementary School, two things that you'll notice in the staff report. One is to initiate the Monarch Corridor Study. So this is something we brought up last year when we did the Albion Corridor Study. In the Doherty Valley, the county and the developers have basically striped every intersection with a crosswalk, which raises a false sense of security among pedestrians, because we get pedestrians, you know, young, who assume the minute I step in the crosswalk, every car is going to magically stop for me. That's not true, right? Not all the time. So what we'd like to do is channelize the pedestrian activity. So instead of having, right now I believe we have 11 crosswalks marked on North Monarch between Doherty Road and Bollinger Canyon, we could probably get away with maybe 7, 6, something in that. Yeah, like on Albion, I think we ended up removing 5 crosswalks. And then channelizing to fewer intersections, and then actually enhancing those few crosswalks, as opposed to enhancing all 11. So we'd like to do the same thing. This is actually going to kickstart next month, so the TAC will be involved in this. Once we do all of our studies, we'll bring it to you before we make the final determination for which ones to remove. But it is exciting to embark on this, and I think at the end of the day, we'll have fewer, safer channelized locations, which is much better. And the second thing we're going to work on with the school is having folks pull forward. So if you were to look right when you're standing in the school's driveway, you would say, oh, pickup must be almost over. I don't see any additional vehicles in the driveway. But then you look left and you realize, whoops, well, when you look left, you realize there is a whole queue of cars outside. They just can't get in the driveway because one vehicle decides to load at the beginning of the driveway.
And this happens all the time at the school site.
But doesn't the teachers tell them to
move
forward?
They try, and they just, one minute, my kid's right here, hold on. And that one kid ends up having band equipment and a friend that they're waiting for.
Some schools, don't they call out the kids' names?
They do, yeah.
They do. They do. We do valet service at a couple of schools, Spring Hills, Live Oak, and at Bella Vista.
And it works.
It does work at those school sites. But even the school site has the program. But then you get those few rogue parents who, that sense of entitlement, he says, which is what I want. Can't do that. And so we have spoken to the principal here. That is, in fact, the principal right there. And we've told him that he needs to
bring
out the, So he's asked for,
firearms?
Yeah. He said, can I get some assistance from the city? And we told him, well, the school district actually provides many schools with these sandwich boards that they please go forward. No cell phones while in driveway. Again, common sense signs that MUTCD does not allow us to publish, but we can on private property. So we are going to put those signs out this school year and pretty aggressively enforce the please pull forward, because this was just, this was amazing. So yeah. All right. Let's see where this takes us next.
Is there a way you can overlay an aerial on this? So we can see the circulation inside.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Right
before.
So I think that does help.
Yeah. That's something we can definitely look into. The way they built this program for us was without the aerials plugged in, but I think that might be something that we can have our GA specialist turn on so that we have another layer on top of it.
Yeah, because it'll help to show, and then you can actually highlight with a point.
There's a car that's stopped right here, and it's queued all the way back up.
We'll do that. We'll try to turn on.
Because unless you're out there to see it, like PJ is, it's hard for some people to visualize what's actually happening.
Right.
So Quail Run Elementary School, you'll notice the no left turn signs. What we'd like to effectively put in place here is a one-way circulation without turning the street into one-way circulation. So everybody will be required to enter the school driveway by making a right turn into the driveway. We did this last year with their kindergarten driveway, which was done on a much smaller scale because, you know, the volume of parents coming to kindergarten versus 1 through 5. And it was successful. So we thought, why not then implement it for the entire school? Again, you get that consistency, everyone's on the same program, and with so many small streets intersecting the school zone, we just thought it made more sense to do a one-way.
Mm-hmm. Is that a one-way from, you know, 7:30 to 8:30, or is it just no left turns?
It is from 7:30 to, I think, 9 o'clock, and then, 1:30 to 3.
Okay, so there's a time.
Exactly.
Good. Okay.
Yeah. And then for Quail Run, we will, basically, we're putting in 150 feet of parking restriction at this intersection right here. So you see that red line that we've drawn in there. And this is something that came up because this construction has just taken place, and these homes were just occupied. So as a result of the homes being occupied, we've now got vehicles parking on the street, and it affects the roadway geometry as well. So we identified this location as meeting the red curb just to allow for turning visibility. And I think this is something you'll see, you know, in the next few years as Doherty Valley sort of wraps up, is as homes get occupied and traffic patterns are established, we're noticing new things that we might not have before. All right, let's see where this magic and tech takes us next. Golden View Elementary School. So at Golden View Elementary School, the one recommendation that we are bringing forward is installing what we call a leading pedestrian signal face. So at the intersection of Crow Canyon Road and Canyon Crest Drive, which is this location right here, we've got, it's the main intersection to the school, and Crow Canyon Road also happens to be the major arterial for everyone heading to 680. What we've noticed is as soon as the pedestrian signal comes on, so does the green signal for everybody wanting to exit the school driveway from Canyon Crest. And there are a high number of vehicles that are actually making a right turn to head west down on Crow Canyon. So as soon as they see the light turn green, their focus is the vehicles coming
from the Danville side. They forget that there are pedestrians actually waiting to cross at the corner. So as soon as they see the light turn green, their response is yes. So what we'd like to do is implement a leading pedestrian phase, which gives a couple of seconds of all red for everyone, allow that pedestrian to establish themselves in the crosswalk and actually get a few feet ahead of that immediate intersection.
Give them a 5 second head start.
Mm-hmm. Is there a crosswalk on the eastern corner also?
There isn't.
So if that's the only, why not move the crosswalk to their side so that you only, if you only have one crosswalk crossing there, you put it on the other corner.
Because yeah. then the kids then would have to cross the street to get to the crosswalk.
And this intersection, if they were to cross this way, you'll notice in the picture, we've got so much demand for right turners into it. And then the majority of the students that were crossing were actually crossing and then going into the Lakemont community. Mm. So they were traveling westbound. So that would be, it's one of those locations where.
Well thought out. Good sibling.
So have you thought of a, you thought of a blank out no right turn sign during those 5 seconds?
We did. Our traffic engineer said to hold off on that. We're actually going to study this in terms of long-term planning. What we want to do is continue to look at this intersection, and this is why. Mm-hmm. So if you'll notice, these vehicles were trying to make a left turn to get into the school driveway, but it was packed. That's the cue. The light has already turned red for them, and the folks traveling westbound on the Canyon have already started into the intersection. So now this vehicle
is stuck.
Oh, the truck has a green signal. All of them now have a green signal, and these two are just stuck here. And this doesn't just happen in the PM. During the AM, the identical thing happened. Mm-hmm. During one of the observations, this vehicle actually went further, you know, the vehicle that was in this position, actually was further into the intersection, but couldn't go anywhere. The folks that were trying to get to the freeway, the folks that were trying to get to the freeway started honking at her. She was so flustered that she made like a multi-point U-turn and then just started traveling westbound on Crow Canyon. Yeah. It was sad. So what I've put in the report is that this upcoming school year, we should definitely revisit this intersection and see what else we can do.
Can you put up a do not block intersection sign too?
With the fine amount.
$1,200.
Another thing we're considering that we have.
There's no sign there? I thought there was.
I'll double check. Okay. But one of the things we have in our back pocket is actually restricting right turn on red for these folks.
For these folks.
Because what's happening is they keep sneaking in, which stacks up that queue. When this light turns green, for the left turners, there's nowhere to go.
That's an easy fix.
Right. It was in the report. Mike Talley just asked that he have more time to assess the intersection, but that was one of the recommendations that we have sort of on the back burner. So that way, that I think would really help because these guys keep filtering in. Anytime there's an open spot,
why wouldn't
you? Exactly. There's nothing restricting you to do so.
No, but what I was saying was that the no right turn, when you have your LPI on, then your red indication for the driver, so he's not sneaking to make the right-hand turn while the pedestrians are already crossing.
Okay. All right, Walt Disney Elementary School. It's so boring to go in alphabetical order. So at Walt Disney Elementary School, most of you probably don't remember the saga of Pebble Place, but about 6 years ago, we had a plan to implement a couple of things on Pebble Place, which is the backside of the school. There's actually a walkway right here that leads into the school. So we don't have all this traffic on Pine Valley. We appreciated the fact that folks that live sort of in the southern community would take Thunderbird to Pebble Place to let their students into the school site.
Or walk, right?
A majority of them said walk. Right. What we had noticed back then was there was a need for a U-turn restriction because a lot of parents would drop their kid off right at that walkway and then attempt to make a U-turn sort of in that knuckle. And that would cause issues just because you had vehicles that were constantly coming within 250 feet. And even though according to California Vehicle Code, it's illegal to make a U-turn in a neighborhood with a vehicle approaching, not everybody knows the rule.
And the police officers had said putting up a sign will probably educate more folks to where it deters them from doing so. But 6 years ago, the community pretty much came out against the city and said, we don't want you to install anything on our street. Not a no U-turn sign. At that point, we wanted to put a crosswalk here. No crosswalk, no school zone signs, because they said we were then turning it into a de facto pickup and drop-off zone, and they didn't want that to happen. So after a series of community meetings, we finally engaged them, and they were okay with us installing the crosswalk, because we said the students that are walking to school, they're not going to be affected one way or the other. We're only going to enhance their safety if we do this. So fast forward to this year, and the resident who actually lives right there on the corner sent us an email and said, you never put up that no U-turn sign that we were talking about. And I said, let me refresh your memory. So we sent her the PowerPoint presentation and the accompanying letters from 6 years ago, and she said, okay. She goes, how about if I talk to my neighbors and we all agree that we need the sign, will you install it? And I said, it's not that simple. We still need to go back out now, do our observations, and let you know. So in fact, we went out there and met with the my school officer, who's our Corporal Hartman, and we agreed that, you know, the problem is still there. They're still making the U-turns. So this year we do want to bring the no U-turn recommendation to City Council.
So then that would require us to go back out, notify the residents, and that was what, okay. Yeah,
which is what had dropped them out.
Exactly, which is what happened, yeah. So we could be back here again with people, 6 years
from now, we're like, for the third time. So let's see where this works.
You just have him put it on his own property.
Oh, no, we tried that. They did not want anything on their property.
It's funny, I collect flyers from school zones when homes are on sale, because I love it when people say, walking distance to award-winning school, $100,000 premium, right? And then when we go up to install a sign, all we hear is, our property value is going to drop. We don't want people to know, I don't want to know there's a school
now, here. Nobody's property value is ever dropping it.
Because of a sign.
Because
of a sign.
I'll sell
my house. Don't call me. That's cards for it.
He'll get a premium.
So we're gonna travel down the same path. Let's see how far we get. The other thing for Walt Disney Elementary School is that the red line you see right there, that is because we would like to install parking restrictions along Pine Valley Road just before you enter the school driveway to effectively create a queuing lane that is not in the way of your traffic. So we want to pull the vehicles waiting to turn right off of Pine Valley Road, because
so they can queue in the no parking zone.
Yep. So set up a no parking zone during school bell times, and that way the vehicles are not parked there. Pine Valley Road is such a busy street with the other schools, and a lot of times what you have is Pine Valley Middle School gets out before Walt Disney. By the time those parents get down to Walt Disney, all the parents who arrive 20 minutes before the bell rings have blocked traffic. Mm-hmm. So we've observed parents actually overtaking, which is, you know, definitely not something we want to encourage.
So this would just be time-restricted.
Time-restricted queuing lane, basically.
It won't affect the traffic's buses going into the
building? No, it'll actually help the traffic's buses, because one of the things we had noted last year was the traffic's bus was caught in that queue as
Okay, so they'll be able to bypass that and then go into the driveway?
So they'll be able to bypass all the cars because they're now pulled aside, which is the same thing we did
at Coyote Creek. That's what I thought. Okay.
So it lets through
and that worked great at Coyote Creek, really That would be a good thing to remind the council. We did this at Coyote Creek. And
you know, I'll actually add a picture, a visual, so we can see what that looks like. So that's Walt Disney. Oh, Twin Creeks Elementary School. So right here in our neighborhood. A couple of things. These little signs you'll see here, those are locations where we have the in crosswalk yield to pedestrian sign. You've probably seen them. They're about 3 feet tall, fluorescent yellow green. Mm-hmm. They go right in the middle of the crosswalk. Well, the ones they have right now are portable, so they just have a rubber base. And the school janitor actually has the job of taking them, you know, in and out every day. Well, recently one of them was hit by a vehicle and dragged far down the neighborhood. I think it made it all the way to Norris Canyon before somebody realized it. So we have decided to make sure that all of our signs are now permanent mounted into the pavement versus just portable.
Concrete bollards work really good for that.
Right. Big red ones.
That would definitely surprise the FedEx guys that use these as target practice. So So that's something we're doing here. And these signs, you know, there's a considerable expense to them, something I did want to bring to City Council's attention. They cost about $300 to $400 a sign. So whenever we have a garbage truck or somebody knock down one of them, the first phone call I get is from our maintenance crew. It's like, fork up another $400, because guess what? One of your signs got hit. And we've debated back and forth, you know, should we continue with these signs or should we not? But the overwhelming response from the community and the police officers is that they are so visible and so effective. Mm-hmm. And every time we consider, let's not install, the feedback we get is, well, imagine if that were actually a pedestrian. It's better they hit the sign than they hit a pedestrian. So that's what I've heard from the community. So we are going to continue to recommend them. And in this location, we're going to make them permanent so we don't have vehicles driving away.
Is there not room?
Diameter concrete.
Is there not room to stripe a little island?
So that was something that actually Deborah had brought up. In one of the cities, they put it just outside of the crosswalk, and they had painted like a median around it. That's something we have forwarded to Patrick Gutierrez in our Public Services Department. I'll follow up with him and see what his response was to that.
Is there parking on the curb where the sign is?
Yes.
So they have parking in one room.
Mm-hmm. But this narrows it, so this kind of, so it's a form of traffic calming too. So.
Yeah, I'm just thinking if we don't have parking there, then the four spaces are gone and you have more rooms, so you people not going to need it in that.
Yeah. Which we've done at, you'll see at Country Club, we're actually going to do that because the churning radius is so narrow now. But yeah, that's it's kind of a two-way, right? Because having the sign in the middle of the road actually narrows your traveling,
right.
So it reduces your speeds. But then in some instances,
yeah, I'm just thinking about the trucks.
The trucks, the big trucks, yeah.
I have a 26-foot out this. I don't know why.
And then the other thing we'd like to do is replace some of the. We've noticed that some of the signage on Bollinger Canyon Road is actually quite faded. So replace the signage. Also, we have a flashing beacon at this location on Bollinger Canyon. The housing on that is also faded. It's been there for at least the last 15 years, I can recall. So we'd like to upgrade it to the one you guys might have noticed at Village Parkway in Triana. It's the bright yellow housing. So it would be great to upgrade that as well.
There's also one that on the northbound, there's a flashing yellow beacon.
We would replace both of them. Okay. That is Pink Creek. All right. Where are we at? Neil Armstrong Elementary School. So for Neil Armstrong, two things listed in the report. First is to upgrade the crosswalk at the intersection of Calais and Gorham with pedestrian crossing signs. So right now there is nothing other than the two continental stripes for the crosswalk, so we'll upgrade that. And then the second thing is to install red curb adjacent to the crosswalk at Devona and Calais. So right now we've got a crosswalk there. It is in front of someone's home, but all the observations we've done, you just cannot see elementary school age pedestrians stepping into the crosswalk. So for public safety, we will be notifying the homeowners and raising the safety flag and installing that red curb.
Was there something in the corner of Calais on that side with the elementary market that parked there?
Right here?
No, to right. To the other side.
Over here?
Yeah, if you follow that to the school, is there something that owner there, that the homeowner didn't want people parking along there or something like that?
Oh, yeah, there was. We had that homeowner in the front. They didn't want anybody, yeah, blocking their house.
Yeah, the side
of
the house.
In front of Neil Armstrong, yeah.
So that we don't have a red curb there?
No.
I mean, I think they'd like one, but yeah.
Okay.
And we had that issue at Country Club as well.
Country Club.
Yeah. Country Club, yes, the game corner.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Live Oak Elementary School. So one of the big things that we're going to do at this school is clarify that the driveway along the kindergarten area was meant to be one-way circulation.
Mm-hmm.
Some people get it, many others don't. So all of the care buses, they understand. They come early, they back in, and they know that they're going to leave by exiting to the north. However, many people try to avoid or just don't know that it's a one-way circulation. So what we end up getting is all the parents are lining up to go one way, pick up their student or drop off their student, and then you get these random parents who are making multiple point turns because they want to go exit from the south driveway. And this has caused conflicts. They've actually had collisions internally in the driveway. So we've decided to clarify it with very large arrows and signage. This is school district property, right? school district property, so we're going to work with the principal, Nadine Rosenzweig, and she's going to actually process the work order through the district to have the stenciling done. And I think it'll definitely help.
Is it because the parking is perpendicular? Is that
yeah.
Well, so they restriped that so it's angled.
Yeah. We thought about doing that, but then we would lose parking spaces, yeah, and then they have several parking, those end caps. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those would actually have to be reconfigured, so the cost was high, but that was our initial. In fact, you see the faded lines? Mm-hmm. We had actually left it for the last almost 8 months while we were considering the parallel parking, because we thought, why go under and restripe it if we're going to turn it into parallel, and then we realized we can't do it because of the loss of parking spaces and the end caps having to be reconfigured. Mm-hmm. So, very large arrows on the pavement. And then we will be upgrading. What we noticed was that this crosswalk right here at the intersection of East French Parkway and Enfield does not have the yellow required striping. In fact, it's white. So we're going to upgrade that to yellow so everyone knows that they are now in a school zone. And then we also have a crosswalk right out here at the intersection of Aldgate and Sherwood. It's not only is it uncontrolled, but it also has not been upgraded to have any pedestrian pavement markings or signage, so we're going to upgrade that. And then the last thing, which you actually can't see on this map, but there's a crosswalk out on Windmere Parkway, at the intersection of Windmere Parkway and Windside Lane, uncontrolled, and it just needs to be removed at this point. Because the other two crosswalks nearby, which are Kearney Way, East French Parkway, and Holborn, all are enhanced, either with a traffic signal, which is probably the best, or a flashing crosswalk. And this one at Windside is just left by itself. And if you need to cross, you can always go to Holborn, or you can actually go to the traffic signal at the Tassajara staging area and park. There's no urgency for folks to cross there. And during the observations, we've noticed that depending on where the sun is, and the fact that you're coming uphill from Windermere, from Camino Tassajara, there's some visibility concerns. So the sooner we can get it out of there, the better.
Do you have a speed limit sign? Mm-hmm.
That's exactly where it is. So it's right by the radar speed display sign when you're coming into the city. Mm-hmm.
Thank
you. Alright, Hidden Hills Elementary School. So for Hidden Hills Elementary School, what we're going to do is that infamous in-roadway crosswalk sign, we're going to install one right here at the intersection of Albion and Harcourt. And then, of course, increased police enforcement along that corridor. This is the path to Doherty Valley High School, which is just down the road. And so we have been getting concerns and complaints regarding speeding. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are actually saying they look like school kids, so it might be kids that just get their license and on their way to school.
Actually, go through the roller coaster ride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is a roller coaster ride. It is. It's pretty bad.
We refer to them as natural speed humps. And then we did put this little sign out here because under the long-term planning, we have received several requests to turn the crosswalk at the intersection of Albion and Silva Way into one of the lighted flashing crosswalks. So just a long-term, once warranted, we could look into that.
Does it have something right now in the middle of it?
Yeah.
It has middle of it, yeah.
Yep. Country Club Elementary School. So at Country Club Elementary School, we are going to be installing red curb where you see these little markings. So along Northland Avenue, at Mayway, and at Blue Fox Way. And at these locations, last year we had installed the in crosswalk sign. And the complaint we got was twofold. One was that, you know, there are vehicles parking right up to the crosswalk, so you can't see students stepping into the newly enhanced crosswalk. But then we also had, actually the principal of Doherty Valley High School lives on this roadway, and he said that the turning radius is so tight for him now because of that sign, that he said the red curb would also help them enhance their turning radius. So it's two for one. So that's for
the PJ, how about, because I know this, somebody on the council will ask this question, how is it with that white, the sidewalk that's wider?
I do have pictures of that, so I'll actually look at it when we go to City Council.
Okay.
It's definitely being used. So
good.
Yeah, in the past few reports, we had told you that the width of the crosswalk, because this is a much older community, back then the standards were different. So we had a very small, I think it was a 3-foot or 4-foot sidewalk, and students, parents, you know, strollers were just pouring over the sidewalk into the roadway.
Right.
And so what we did was we actually had a CIP project to widen the crosswalk between the school driveway, the exit, all the way out to Devona Drive. And the school has been so appreciative of our efforts. Everyone's using it, and it's great.
Everybody's happy but the guy who lives at the corner.
Right, exactly. Yeah. We did take our 5-foot to accomplish this. But yeah, I'll upload the pictures.
Yeah, that'll be good. Okay.
So when you're saying you're red curving, how much are you doing?
We typically do 20 or 25 feet. So one vehicle.
One parking space.
And then that concludes our field trip throughout San Ramon. We did want to let you know that during the observations, we did check for traffics and how the circulation of the buses and the bus stops are impacting each of the school sites that it's at, which right now we have about 4 elementary school sites, Coyote Free Country Club, New Armstrong, and Walt Disney. And at all 4 school sites, I mean, the traffics program is just doing a great job. And, you know, it's been a learning experience, so we have had to tweak where the bus picks up or, you know, what time the bus arrives to avoid traffic. And I think this year we were at a point where there just were no issues with traffic on the school sites. And then we will continue to collaborate, enhance, and encourage. This report does go to our City Council on October 10th with your recommendations and your feedback. After the October 10th approval, we would then meet with all the school principals, let them know what has been approved, work with them for work orders for any of the changes on their school site. We would issue work orders to our public services team for the stuff on the city right of way. And then come spring of 2018, we'll head back out there to evaluate. Thank you very much.
Other questions or comments?
That's good job. Mm-hmm.
Nice job. Thank you.
Spearheads? Just for the tire.
There you go.
Right
on
the spot,
right?
Have you seen the replacements for the boot? Just put it on the windshield. Have you seen? No, you see, they go on the windshield. Have you seen these things?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is, yeah. It puts these monstrous suction cups on your windshield, and you can't get it off. Yeah, they say that the. Guys used to put the boot on, and they were getting a lot of back injuries and things, so they can put this big thing on your windshield that just covers your windshield.
No damage to windshield.
Well, it's, you know, it's like the suction cups they used to pick up windshields and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Same kind of thing, but then they cover it with this big plastic housing.
So now when you see the cars backing up the freeway with these two things on the front. So
or no windshield because they've broken it from the
inside. That's what your backup camera's for.
You got that right. All right. Okay, moving right along. Unfinished business. 5.1 North Bellingham Way.
Okay. Surprise, surprise.
And our speaker on that topic is.
Yeah, so Amy's actually going to pass out a survey. This is a draft version, so we're looking for your comments tonight. When we came to you earlier this year with the North Bellingham Doherty Valley parking issue, at that point we had shared with you several options to consider, right? So now let me back up real quick. North Bellingham Way, which is out in Doherty Valley, is experiencing parking issues because the residents of Highlands Point Apartments and visitors to that community are parking their additional vehicles or vehicles that are not registered to the site along North Bellingham Way. Over the course of the last 6 months, staff has conducted observations along North Bellingham Way, Arrowfield Way, Alamere, all of the roadways in that community. We've done license plate surveys, we've interviewed folks, and we have come to conclude that those vehicles, in fact, do belong to people from the apartment community. At first, we were thinking that maybe it's Doherty Valley High School students, but we have been able to identify that Doherty Valley High School students are conducting overflow parking along Arrowfield Way, and the folks on North Bellingham Way are from Highlands Point Apartments. So there's basically 2 zones with 2 different problems. Some of the options that we brought to TAC in June were to modify Ivy Hill Way and, you know, convert the Class 2 bike lane into a parking lane, or modify the sidewalk so that you can accommodate both a bike lane as well as a parking lane. So sort of the mission or the goal of that was to really put the parking problem back near Highlands Point Apartments so that the management takes the problem more seriously and does something about it. The second option was to implement something like permanent parking throughout the North Bellingham area, but then that would put more of the problem and the frustration on the residents who live there, who had nothing to do with the problem, but now they have to deal with permanent parking and getting passes and things of that nature. The third option was to almost landlock the people who were responsible for the overflow parking by implementing either no parking or restricted parking along North Bellingham Way. So just put up a 2-hour parking zone throughout that area. Now they're just gonna have to either get rid of their vehicles or go back to their management team and ask them to register, something of that nature. So those were kind of the three broad recommendations. When we consulted with the city attorney's office to find out what would it require for us to pursue any of these, they actually advised that we sort of take a step back and engage the rest of the neighborhood. They said at this point, we're hearing from Mr. Jones, who was the resident that came in, right? He came in, you know, very powerful speaker, very compelling argument, all the pictures he's taken, the discussions he's had with PD. But our attorney office said, well, you've only heard from him. And as much as he says he does represent the community, you really need to engage the rest of the community to find out if they want the city to address this problem. Because addressing this problem isn't very simple. We could put up no parking on North Bellingham Way, but we might just shift the vehicles from what's a side yard right now to actually in front of someone's home. So what's more of an issue for you? Would you rather say, I know the car's parked there, but thank God they're not in front of my home, or would you rather we do something else? So that's where we've now sort of taken this step back, and what we'd like to do is send a survey out to all of the homeowners in that community and engage them and find out just how big of a problem is this for them and what are their thoughts on it. So we thought the best way was to actually send this out.
And this is similar to what we did with the Campton community, if you remember, a few years ago with Fioli. We actually surveyed Campton residents and the community to, you know, determine whether or not there was interest in installing permit parking before we went to that next step. So, as PJ mentioned, the city attorney's office reminded us of that and said, before we go down this road, you know, get feedback from the rest of the residents, because while it obviously is a problem for Mr. Jones, mm-hmm. and it's a quality of life issue for him, it may not be an issue for other residents. I doubt it, but let's find out. Let's survey the residents. If they're that concerned about it, hopefully they'll fill out the survey. We'll get the responses, and then we can move forward with
it. Aren't those parking restrictions still out there by Fioli? I remember that was supposed to be a temporary situation, you know, 1 or 2 years.
Campton?
Yeah, Campton.
The permit parking? It's yeah. It's permanent now.
It's not permanent?
Yeah, it's permanent,
okay.
Yeah.
And there was one street that chose not to participate.
Right, and they haven't had a problem, yeah. Right? Knock on wood, they haven't had a problem.
There was a fourth option, too, is having a sign there that you can't park during the day so they clean the streets.
Right.
I don't know if that's something that's...
Yep. And that was part of, we asked the city attorney's office any type of restriction you'd like to take forward and what it would include. And that's where they just said, hold on. They said, you guys did such a good job through the tap with Campton and Fioli in terms of engaging the community. And they said to take a step back and really hear from everyone else.
Right, and we don't want to hear from them when we're getting ready to install the signs, and we know, because we know what's going to happen. Those cars are going to be, they're going to go somewhere else, and they're probably going to go in front of your house or,
my street. That's
your street, right. And so we don't want to hear from them at that point. We want to hear from them now.
And also, I think we had the permit parking, like you said, in Cal High and other high schools, so that seems important. Do you live close by then?
Yeah, Crayford. And Casella.
Okay.
Well, I've had a couple of apartment vehicles park on Cranford, and they're usually there on the weekends, and then they come up and go park somewhere else.
I think that's a good thing to have by close to high school, because Cal High is a good example. It just keeps on going out.
Yeah,
but the difference with Cal, though, with Cal High, is that it's, you know, Monday through Friday, 7 to 4. You know, this issue is in the evenings and on the weekends, the parking. That's where the bulk of the
problem is. And then
5 p.m. to 6 a.m.
Yeah, although you still, what we have found, though, PJ's research and from PD's research, there are some cars that are not moving. They're storage cars. You know, people, you saw the pictures from David Jones. You know, people are using some of these cars as storage, and they just leave the cars there for 2 or 3 days, and then
service vehicles. So yeah, a tow truck. There's a plumbing, and some of these guys are, they do the night shift. So these vehicles are actually parked there even in the middle of the day. So this would almost be like, you know, Broadmoor right in front of Cal High, where 24 hours a day is perfect parking, because at any point these vehicles show up. Okay, so we don't really have, you know, and to be quite frank with all of you, we don't have an easy fix. Right. I feel like at Campton and Fuelly, at least we knew that everyone comes home around 7 p.m. They, you know, grab their iPads and everything, and we see them actually walking. These are, you know, professionals who return from work and just park there. And that's one of the things we heard with the feedback, too.
Right. But Fuelly, a lot of those residents, so they had the capacity to park their cars in their garages. They just chose not to do that. Whereas we don't have that issue at Highlands. You know, we know that there are people that are either living at Highlands and they don't want to tell the property manager they're living there because whatever deal they have with affordable housing or whatever the case may be. And so they're not registering their vehicle and they're just parking in the community.
I have to tell you a story. At my office, we have an underground parking garage and people are parking their second vehicles there. The cars don't move.
Yeah.
And management has to come say something and then they move the car, move it over, and then it sits there for months.
Like, right.
So all this reduction in parking that we're doing with affordable housing, people aren't getting rid of their second cars. Yeah. It's just unintended consequences.
And that really is the root of the problem here. We have a memo from St. Anton developers who actually built this
years ago, right, to the
years
county,
ago
right.
to the county, asking for a reduction.
Right,
in
and
parking.
It was granted.
Yeah, and it said that, you know, from our research, their research, people who live in affordable housing communities don't park at the same
Or they ride public transit.
But when you're in the middle of San Ramon, right?
What public transit
do you have? Exactly. And we had this debate. We I think at the end of the day, we knew we were going to inherit this parking problem because we saw that the county granted that parking, and so had it been the city, our parking requirements, I think it was almost 50 additional parking spaces they would have needed. Yeah.
Which would have been exactly. Would have
taken care of the whole thing.
Exactly.
Yep. But this is a very good idea. Our council people will be more than happy to tell you, is no matter how many times you tell people, come talk to us about this, come, we're having a meeting, we're having a this, we're having that, they don't show up. And then at the end, they scream at you because you didn't tell us. If you sent this thing out, you can say,
Have you thought of putting this online?
Yeah, we talked about that. Yeah, we talked about doing like an online either survey monkey.
Yeah.
We still would have to send something out to the homeowner to notify them, you know, go to this link. Yeah, so we could do both, yeah.
I have a couple comments.
That would be great, yeah. So we'll just
I would add a couple more lines under if you're going to ask someone to write.
Got it.
Number three, I kind of reworded because it didn't make any sense to me, but if the answer to number two is yes, would you still support parking restrictions along North Bellingham Way if it had an unintended consequence of causing long-term parking along other residential frontages and close to driveways in your neighborhood? I think that's what you're trying to say.
Right.
And then what do they do with it?
So then we will have a self-addressed envelope in
stamped envelope, yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, it's a business reply. They don't need to put a stamp on it.
Okay.
But
okay.
Atul brings up a good point, and we did talk about, you know, doing an online survey as well, or, you know, just, you know, have a link, and then people can fill out. So we should consider doing that as well.
The risk you get in that is you might get two responses from the same address, and I don't know if that'll skew your numbers in a funny way.
Is there some way that you could send a card out to residents with a number on it, and that would be their number they would enter into
a code? So
like a code?
Yeah, that's a good idea. So how many homes are we targeting in that area?
I think it was about 50 homes.
So you assign each address a number, and then that's the validation code.
And
so
they can put it on their letter as well, and say either fill this in or use the validation code to access blank. And then if they send that in, you know what number it is.
Okay, so still Stay tuned.
So these are going to go out. Huh? PJ, what was the plan?
Yeah, we're going to send them out next week, and then we were going to give everybody 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay.
I would go 3 weeks. I've been on business trips.
I think so.
Okay.
PJ, is Cranford part of the server or part of the group? Okay.
Okay.
So everybody down Arrowfield, North Bellingham Way, and Cranford, sort of that zone, neighborhood one, I think it was called. All the streets off of it.
That's here, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. So that's North Bellingham.
Right.
Just to the right is Cranford, parallel, running parallel to it, and then Arrowfield as well.
Okay.
So it's that zone.
It doesn't cross those.
Yeah, everything between the park. Basically, you see that square? That's the park, and Albion Road.
So those in that immediate area, right?
Okay.
Great. Thank you.
Outstanding. Moving right along, our another speaker on 5.2. Someone by the name of PJ.
We did receive a request from the Homeowner Association Services. They're kind of the majority representative. They have complained on behalf of their residents that folks are speeding on Maidenhair Way. And this is not the first time.
I was going to say, I remember this.
Yeah, it came in actually several years ago. And that time the request was for Browntail, which is just north. And we had actually implemented a lane narrowing technique on that road. So we had installed a center line, we had put in parking lanes, and it's almost an identical complaint at this point. It's the kids who go to, or the parents who are dropping their kids off at Gale Ranch Middle School, which you can see is just across the street. They're using Blue Heart and Maidenhair to do pick up and drop off. And when they want to avoid the traffic signals on Bollinger Canyon, they cut through Maidenhair, go right up to Brower Way, and then they can show up to Safeway, Wedgwood, Monarch Road, all of those sort of back connectors. So we are going to launch phase one. We'll do the street survey, make sure we've got our signage and striping, deploy the radar trailer, and get some selective police enforcement, and then we will come back.
And I have a question, Brian. Are we looking at the real problem itself? And we talked about it before. It seems like we have this area, we have the other area.
You know, and we did, I brought this up at our coordination meeting, and Mike Talley, who you all know, our traffic engineer and our signal guru, he was at that, and I did bring that up to him, that we've, at this point, have complaints from Maidenhair, which connects to Brower, which connects to Camisea, if you all remember, and we've had these streets come in, and that's almost the, sort of the back way to get across, you know, Doherty Valley without hitting the traffic signals. And so the route really comes down to people don't want to wait at those traffic lights. And, you know, he has recently implemented a new coordination for all of the traffic signals in Doherty Valley. So we're looking forward to seeing his evaluation and seeing if that's, you know, improved, you know, wait times and so forth. But, I mean, he kind of has done what he can with the traffic signals out there. But when you consider how long the medians are, how much time you have to give to pedestrians to get across, it just... Yeah, it just really adds up. And
the lights aren't synchronized, are they?
It was supposed to be with this recent Doherty Valley upgrade.
I remember 19th Avenue in the city used to be, if you traveled from here to here at a certain speed and it was posted, you would make the entire way.
Same thing at 19th and Geary.
So you guys are noticing the same that there isn't, right?
It's
I thought it was just me.
You'd sit out there at the light with no one going through.
I will
you're the
take
only
this
one.
Feedback to him because when I complain, it's like, oh, it's PJ.
Another good one is Brian's car. What if you can tell it?
Well, that's not any better.
For the Bridges Golf Course, that's another light that if you're trying to cross it, you can sit there forever and almost put the car in reverse, try to trigger it again.
I've noticed that, and it's because actually the green left turn arrow for folks on eastbound Bollinger stays on for the longest time. It just holds everybody. I've noticed that as well. So, okay. All right. This is a good look together. And then the last location is Ensenada Drive.
We have a really beautiful resident. She lives on the corner of Ensenada and Mangoes, Miss Barkley. She's actually been, you know, very instrumental in helping us develop policies and address issues around Cal High. And the latest thing she brought to our attention is parents who are actually somewhat abusing permit parking zones, but also abusing private driveways. So she came home from, you know, grocery shopping and errands, and probably the last four times she's been met with someone parked in her driveway. So this is a parent waiting to pick up
in
their
driveway
student in her driveway. Mm. And so she's gotten into, you know, verbal back and forth with them.
I block them in. Call an officer.
Mm-hmm. And she did. She's called officers. You know, they have been able to speak to a couple of these folks, but by the time they come out, you know, with service calls and priorities, that 15-minute window gets away very quickly.
Yeah, park right behind her.
She has. So she, and you know, poor thing, when she came to us, I mean, she was, this is one of our senior residents, and she was so flustered with what was taking place. And just the fact that people would actually talk back and have that same sense of entitlement. Well, I'm just here for a few minutes. Why does it bother you? And so we told her that we're
Again, there is no standard sign
to address this type of activity. Yeah, common sense sign. But our police department, I think Lieutenant Bohr, who actually heads up the My Beat My School program, he actually has taken this very seriously. Yeah, he's got his team out there on patrol in the area. They're supposed to give us their feedback and their report. We wanted to know how these citations are issued and what's going on. Once they report back to us, we're going to get back to Mrs. Barkley. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, she's asked, you know, she's at that level of frustration where even the permit parking zone, technically you can load and unload because it's permit parking, which means it's not a no stopping, no loading. Mm-hmm. So the people who were in her driveway are now basically right in front of her home, in front of the permit parking zone. And we told her there's really nothing we can do about that. So then she said, well, make it red curb. She's like, red curb, everything around my property. Just get them out of here. And we explained to her that even red curb won't address the issue because you can, again, as long as you're attending the vehicle, you can actually pull in front of a red curb as well. So we're really trying to address, you know, the issue she's brought to us and try to ease some of the tension along that roadway. We'll report back to you once Lieutenant Ward gives us sort of the feedback on how many citations and what they think we should do out there.
Has she had multiple occasions of people parking in the driveway?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Pardon?
Do you know Sandy Barkley?
I mean, when she came to us, she was shaking.
Yeah, she was.
I think she had just gotten into the altercation with
them. And then I think the worst part of it is that people are just very disrespectful, and they, you know, they cuss at her, tell her to get the F back in your house. You know, you don't own the street, you don't own the city. I mean, it's just really bad.
Oh gosh.
Yeah. Boy. And she doesn't make this stuff up.
I wouldn't be doing that in my
house.
Yeah,
okay,
I know.
And then that's it for our reporting.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, PJ. Appreciate the input. Moving right along. Committee member items.
So I have one thing. The October TAC meeting will be canceled because we'll have a bike master plan workshop the same day, same time frame. It'll be at the EOC room at City Hall at 6:30.
Right, so rather than the TAC meeting, that is the same night as the Bike Master Plan Community Workshop. So all of you obviously will be invited, and we hope you're there. So in lieu of a TAC meeting, we'll have the community workshop for the Bike Master Plan.
Who's invited from the community? Anybody?
Yeah, anybody.
Is there a website that I can direct people to that they can check out?
We are sending the notices out. It'll be on the website.
Yeah, I'll just send it out to some people.
Yes.
All right. Moving right along. Is there a city council representative here somewhere who would like to say
We recently had a, there's two things I want to talk about. One was we had a joint meeting with the Parks and Community Services Commission to talk about the Parks Master Plan. We're updating the Parks Master Plan. Every 10 years we go through this process to update the Parks Master Plan. A couple of interesting things came out of that. One of them is there was a consensus to include some of our open space as park. And we're talking about those parts of our open space that have trails. So if it has a trail in it,
it has a recreation value. Now, you can't necessarily count it acre for acre. Mm-hmm. I don't think there was any movement or consensus to call it acre for acre, but giving an example, if we had 2,000 acres of open space that have trails, we might count it at 1/20th of that. So 100 acres of that open space would be counted as part of our Parks and Recreation program. Because explicitly in the old one, it says excludes all open space. Mm-hmm. Well, we've now got CIPs for trailheads, enhancements, and things like that. So if, as our, we also have a impact fee where we collect open space and trail impact fees on developers. Mm-hmm. So we've explicitly made it part of our CIP, we've made it part of our fee structure, we need to include it in our Parks Master Plan. And so we're moving forward with that. That was a consensus of that. The other thing that there was two other things. One of them was that we need to be financially responsible in our parks program. We've gotten to the point where we might be too park rich. What I mean by that is the maintenance of these beautiful series of parks out here are expensive to maintain, and so we're making choices about what level of maintenance we can afford on park land versus other city services. And so we need to be cognizant of what we're doing as we're moving forward with future parks. There was one area that we felt that there was some need for a park, and we own a little tiny piece of land up here off of Old Crow Canyon near the Culligan Water building. There's a little piece of land we own right there. And as you're probably aware, these two buildings have been torn down, and there's now 48 housing units there. At the old outpost, there was 170 units that's going to be built there. And Morgan's Masonry has proposed 200 and some units
there.
And the Golden Skate, of course, up there. But if you just count these three projects here, and you say, well, gee, they're all kind of close to, here's that Old Crow Canyon is right here. That parcel that we own is right about there. And you say, geez, wouldn't it be nice to have a park to serve those people?
Like a passive park?
Yes, a passive park that, you know, we're talking a few picnic tables, maybe a barbecue, maybe a small play structure for the 2 to 5 year old crowd, and maybe a little grassy area. But those people or those developers are all paying park development fees. And our standard is 4 acres per thousand of neighborhood park plus another 2.5 acres per thousand of specialty park or community park. And so if you add up the number of people or the number of units and people that would be in these three projects just by themselves is about 1,000. And so a three acre park right here would serve that community quite well. So that seemed to gain a little bit of momentum as a priority. The other thing, working with the Planning Commission, we specifically, on the specific plan, the Crow Canyon specific plan, which covers this area roughly right in here, from the freeway to the hills, the Danville border to Crow Canyon, that area, there is some housing overlays that had a density of 22 to 55 units per acre. State law allowed for up to 65 units per acre if there was affordable housing as part of it. What we chose to do was pull it back to 35 units per acre, so when the state density bonus gets applied, it goes back up to 47 units per acre because we thought that's what the infrastructure could support. That was phase one of a two-phase process. The phase two is to actually redo the rest of the plan. What should the Crow Canyon area look like? Where should housing go? One of the things, statements I made was that, you know that commercial where the kid has Skittles box and he has little Skittles on? I said that if you take the 700 units and spread them over four properties, you could get a property here, you know, a property here, and a property over here. And so you end up with four properties that have no connection at all to each other. And in a properly designed community, you would have those four or five properties be in relatively close proximity to each other so that they have developed a sense of neighborhood or community, and rather than spread over the entire area. That was one of the things that the Planning Commission is going to get that activity first. Though I wouldn't be surprised if we had a joint meeting to start that process.
In October.
Okay, so we're going to start that process with a joint meeting, and then the Planning Commission will work a process to rework the specific plan, and then it'll come to the council. So I'm hoping that we can reduce that area. Plus, we need to make sure we can retain our retail areas.
And commercial.
And our commercial areas. We do not want to eliminate. Mm-hmm. It's more, commercial areas have great value, and you know, service commercial has great value, but retail has a second level of value in that it generates fresh income. Mm-hmm. Those are the big things that happen. And we have a new city attorney. Bob Sachs is retired. He's just a wonderful man on just so many levels. We're going to miss him terribly. But the gentleman we've hired is Martin License. He is a licensed civil engineer as well as a member of the bar.
We won't hold that against him.
Yeah. I mean, we got a few engineers around here. So he licensed civil engineer. So he was spent a number of years working for the county on the other side of the counter in the permit department. He said he ended up talking to a lot of lawyers about land use issues, and he decided they knew more about land use than he did, and he was the one signing permits and things like that. So he went to law school, got his law degree, passed the bar. He went to work for Gagan McCoy out of Danville. Some of you are familiar with Gagan McCoy. Very, very prominent
so,
Danville.
So Gagan, he's a criminal lawyer.
Yes. Yeah.
He was my professor in criminal law.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
Bill Gagan.
Yeah. So Gagan McCoy, he worked at Gagan McCoy mainly on land use issues and working for developers, representing developers through these processes. He said he developed a great insight into what is important to developers, because oftentimes they put things in their development that they'd love to have it, but if you push back on it, they give it up in a microsecond. It's there as part of the negotiation. And then he worked at City of Brentwood as their assistant city attorney. Came very highly recommended by the city attorney at Brentwood. They recognize that, you know, when you have good people, they often move on to, you know, move up the ladder. And so Martin License is our new city attorney, and really looking forward. I worked with him on the Veterans Building in Danville. He did pro bono work representing the veterans in negotiations with the town of Danville in that the maintenance and operation of that building. Good man.
By the way, for a personal comment, I'm very happy to see the city working to keep the volume of humanity in areas reasonable. Mm-hmm. I don't ever want to see us turn into what we see on the hills as you go across the freeway.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
If that ever happens, there will be virtues in the street.
Yeah.
Okay. The city planning commission, that would be...
The only thing that I, other than what Scott said, is we approved a project called the Alcosta...
It's called the Aldenwood?
Aldenwood.
Yeah. Aspenwood?
Aspenwood.
It's on Alcosta at Kellogg.
Kimball.
I'm getting it all wrong. All I can say is it's 55 and older, which I could live in there. But the demographics are going to be 71-year-old women who are widows.
And don't have cars.
Yeah, really? It's right here.
That's what they've heard.
Oh, right my here. God. Yeah, anyway. It's right there. Mm-hmm. It's like 90.
It's been, it's coming to the city council. Bill Clarkson has asked for a review on that project.
Oh, good.
Okay.
Good.
How many units?
It's one that 90. Called on the density bonus, and so they have 92 or 93, and the issue 95, and then what they also did was called the density bonus law allows them to reduce their parking. Mm-hmm. So instead of 100, instead of like 147 spots our ordinance is called for, and the density bonus law calls for 123, they came in and asked for 92 because there's going to be nothing but 71-year-old widows with no cars there.
We'll find out.
That's what they said out in Highlands Apartments, too, which I'm feeling.
Be sure we publish that developer's home address.
So we're expecting all along Kimball that there's going to be people parking all along Kimball.
That's going to be incredible.
But Bill called for a review. We're pretty upset with the architectural elements of it. And
under density, bonus law, though, I don't think you can deny a project to an architect.
It has to be
environmental health or safety.
Well, there was a traffic study, right, Jeannie? There was a traffic study that was done.
No, there wasn't. The city would have had to have paid for it because under density bonus, they just outright get these concessions and waivers. Yep. And the city, if they didn't want to go down to the 92 parking spaces, they could require the 123, mm-hmm. but they would have had to go and do a parking study. Mm-hmm. So what staff did is they looked at existing parking on the street. They looked at our Valley Vista project and how that senior project was parked and whether there's parking issues there and what the ratio was, and supported that there wouldn't be a health a public safety perspective. But
as I pointed out to our real estate did with Carpenter Robbins, I said, well, you know, time is money. And if they want to, you know, delay this and fight this, you know, how many dollars or tens of dollars or tens of thousands of dollars is this worth it? To say, no, this is my design, this is my architecture, I'm not changing a thing. And we just kind of drag it out for a while. Mm-hmm. And if they can't get 3 votes on the council, then okay, now we go to court, and then we have to have settlement agreements. And how much does that cost them in time?
Yeah.
And I talked to a couple architects, and they said, you know what? That's 2 to 3 man days to change the architectural feel of the building.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. The planning commission has a big pile of stuff on their desk. I know. You guys do a great job.
I've seen the planning commissioner running around looking for dogs. Don't give me that. Okay.
Thanks, Bob.
Okay. Our senior representative, Susan, anybody? Okay. And I don't believe we have a teenager here. No, that's not one. Okay. Anybody have anything else to say?
No.
We're out of here.